Hi, and welcome to Mouse Chat. I'm Lisa, and our Mouse Chatters today are Steve, Chris, and Lauren. Welcome, everyone.
Hello.
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 Hello. And today we have special guest Jim Hill of Jim Hill Media. Welcome, Jim.
Hey, welcome
guys.
Back,
nice to be here.
I'm glad you came to join us again.
Oh, it's always fun.
Today we're going to be talking about the usual gossip. We're going to talk about the new Downtown Disney. We're also going to be talking about My Magic Plus, and we're going to touch a little bit on some miscellaneous 2013-14 new stuff in general, just general new stuff going on with Disney. So again, welcome, Jim, and let's start with Downtown Disney.
Well, I mean, you guys, how long have you been following this? That, because, you know, again, people have been wondering what's going to be replaced Pleasure Island since that was 2008, wasn't it?
It goes by so fast. I remember they're going to close Pleasure Island, and then everybody wanted to keep the Adventurers Club open, and they were posting, and then they closed Pleasure Island, and 1 year went by, and it just kind of kept creeping on. Then there was some Hyperion Wharf plans that surfaced, I think it was, and mm-hmm. there were some sketches there, and then that kind of never happened either. I think the rumor we heard around that was, you know, there was just not enough people with the economy to actually fill those spaces that they were trying to rent out. And then that just kind of died. And then I hadn't heard anything since until basically today.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's weird. Disney, you know the real reason that Pleasure Island died, right? That for example, the Adventures Club was actually kind of killed by the people who loved it the most, the locals who would come.
Kind of ironic.
Well, they were the ones who would show up and park themselves in, you know, the rotunda, so to speak, and they'd stay there all night. And, you know, and meanwhile, them that, you know, would go into the library show or the other things, they'd seen the show so many times, they were shouting out lines, they were, you know, I mean, it, and the weird thing is that when guests would come, they would walk into the Adventurers Club, they'd look over the ledge, and they'd see the club was full, and figure, oh, well, all right, I don't need to go there, you know, and leave. And this was very, very frustrating for a lot of the Adventurers Club performers. In fact, I actually got to take part in a very cool thing. The night after the Adventures Club officially closed, I forget who it was who did the there was a private event by sort of, I think, the Congaloosh folks, the people who'd done the convention.
Yeah.
But the night after that, in fact, my webmaster for Jim Hill Media, Max Schilling, and his lovely wife, Jamie, had gotten married that day, and months beforehand had booked the Adventures Club for a private party. And, you know, just the luck of the draw, it turns out to be the very last night the place is open. And, you know, he had only, you know, it was one of these things where it just had I booked about three or four of the performers, and not thinking that, you know, well, you know, and not knowing that this was ever in the works. And so it was really strange, because it was, there were only, I want to say, 50 total people in the Adventurers Club. And what was kind of interesting is a lot of them were Jamie's family, who had never been to the Adventurers Club. And so this was all new to them. And to watch these people who were in this hall, and then suddenly Babylonia, you know, starts talking to them, or, you know, going into the mask room and, you know, having Arnie and company, you know, come alive. And it was, and the performers were really kind of getting off on the fact that it wasn't this jaded bunch of people who knew every routine backwards and forwards and were going through the building with their flash cameras taking pictures of everything. I mean, that was what was kind of interesting, is I got to spend some time in the library, you know, after they'd gone off the clock, and they, you know, the four performers came in and sat down, and, you know, we're sitting there drinking and talking about the club. And it was just sort of like, you know, one of the performers, who I won't use her name because she's still working for Disney now, but just talked about the fact that what had really happened at Disney is that, you know, it's Disney, to her way of thinking, really wasn't interested all that much in entertaining people who were coming to Downtown Disney anymore. They were really more interested in sort of distracting you while they took your money. They didn't, you know, again, it wasn't about entertaining. It was about distracting. And she had her fill of, you know, if you remember that last week when the Adventures Club was closing, I mean, people would line up 3 and 4 hours in advance, and
wow. It
was body to body. And for the performers, it really wasn't a lot of fun because it was sad because their job was going away. And at the same time, they were dealing with these super crowded conditions with these, you know, hyper emotional fans, and it really wore on them after a while. But to be able to do one final night where it's, you know, 50 people, where most of them had never seen the club, it was really kind of sweet. It was really kind of nice to have, if that's going to be my last memory of the club, it's like, that's great. That, you know, but yeah, and I guess that's the sad part, is that there was, there was a manager in place of Downtown Disney, the Pleasure Island area, who was just adamant about they were not going to bring the club back. That, and in fact, they weren't ready for the fan backlash and the letters and everything. And it became a very embarrassing situation because nobody thought that there was this level of passion out there for the club. Yeah. And then there was this weird, like, 3-month-long moment where it was like, okay, if we were going to bring back the Adventurers Club, it would have to make money. There'd have to be a way for us to make money off of the club. We'd also have to figure out how to, you know, to get these locals who park in the club 4 hours, to get them out of there. That I mean, don't get me wrong, they were perfectly willing for people to come and enjoy the club. They just didn't want them to come 5 and 6 nights a week and sit in the exact same chair and, you know, just get in the way of the entertainment.
Yeah. Well, they used to have it used to be ticketed when I was there years ago. So you had to have, you know, just like a park admission, which kind of limited people that were going, but I'm sure, you know, avid fans would still get their annual Pleasure Island pass and go. Mm-hmm.
Well, they actually came up with a really interesting idea. What they were going to do was, you know, they're going to basically, because face it, you know, the entire island shut down. It's not like you can't do something with this set of characters or with this building. And what they took a look at was the Magic Castle in California. Are you familiar with this?
Yeah, I have friends who have been, and I've seen video, but I've never been myself. But yeah, it looks pretty cool.
It is. It is pretty cool. But the gimmick of it is you go to the club and you have dinner first. And then, you know, you have a set schedule of things that you're going to do that, you know, they tell you you're going to see this show in the small room at 8:15. You're going to see, you know, this show in the big room at, you know, 9 o'clock. And then, you know, you're going to move in for the close magic at, you know, 9:30. And, you know, they'll have everybody out by 10 to bring the next group of people in. And what they began talking about was actually knocking down the wall. I mean, what a lot of people don't realize is that the Neon Armadillo the Adventurers Club, I guess it was the BET Club
when it finally closed.
But, you know, they share a lot of space. They've got green rooms connections. They've got, I mean, and they're very close to one another. And the discussion was, well, what if we blew out the wall between, you know, the two clubs? And, you know, what if we created some sort of connective architecture? But BET would be basically where you'd start your night. You would have your dinner in an Adventures Club type restaurant. And then, you know, but, you know, you would also receive your schedule for the evening about where you were going to go and, you know, that sort of thing. And you could end your evening in sort of the Grand Salon having a drink before they had to bring the next group in. And this really got its tires kicked by a lot of people at Disney until finally it was like, you know, if we were doing this right from the get-go, this would have been a great idea, but we didn't. And, you know, if we bring back the Adventures Club in this form, we're asking people to pay to go to the club, and they now have a rigid schedule as opposed to just finding things, it's not going to work. So, you know, it kind of just went away. And I guess the other sad part of the story is if you'd really dig down into the Disney history, when the first iteration of Westcott for California, when they were going to do the East Coast or the West Coast version of Epcot out there, they were going to have a Pleasure Island type club. I mean, I remember being in the presentation and them showing a slide of the Grand Salon at the, you know, at the Adventures Club. And, you know, it was like, look, you know, what is successful about the East Coast version we're bringing here? So it's like, oh my God, they're going to open a West Coast chapter of the Adventures Club. And,
wow.
And there was even at one time, kind of a weird bend on the Adventures Club idea that they were going to do for what was then known as the MGM Studio Burbank project, where they were going to sort of build a thumbnail version of MGM Studios out in the city of Burbank. It's kind of a nighttime entertainment district, but one of the nightclubs they were going to do there was basically, instead of a comedy warehouse, they were going to do a prop warehouse. And you know, you walk in, it was all these props that had been used for great movies. But the problem is that this prop house was different because, for some odd reason, the characters from the movies that these props were used for are hanging around. So you'd have like a colonial desk, you know, sitting there, and suddenly out of, you know, who would enter the room but Benjamin Franklin? Or you'd have, you know, Sam Spade, that's Roll Top Desk, and now here's Sam Spade. And what it was a different bend on the Adventures Club idea because, you know, you'd have Sam Spade and Benjamin Franklin hanging out with, you know, the Queen of Sheba, and, you know, them conferring over drinks and doing bits and things like that. So it was an idea that a lot of people at Disney liked. And at one point, it was supposed to walk around, and now, you know, the only thing that exists of it is, you know, there's so many convention groups or so many corporations who come here to do conventions at Walt Disney World that have hired the club out in the past that, you know, they'll be sitting down with their Disney event coordinators and go, and, you know, we want, you know, we had a great time at that night at, you know, booking all the Pleasure Island, and we'd like to do that again. And they have to go, well, there is no Pleasure Island, but we can bring it to you. And what they do now is that you'll be having a dinner at, you know, for your corporation, and suddenly the door will kick open, and here come the World Explorers, who look suspiciously like members of the Adventures Club. And, you know, the bit then becomes, well, we booked this room 6 months ago, and what are you doing here? And it's like, all right, fine, we'll hold our meeting at the same time you're holding your dinner. And then they do a lot of classic Adventures Club bits. So
nice.
So
very neat.
So keep that in mind if you ever win a lottery. So
because that's what it's going to take.
Yeah. But anyway, I mean, getting back to Pleasure Island, Downtown Disney, Hyperion Wharf. I mean, again, Disney didn't know that right after they closed the Adventures Club, you know, in 2008, all of the, you know, we were going to have the Wall Street spin in and, you know, the financial meltdown. I mean, they had plans. They had people lined up. And, you know, that's why it took a full 2 years for them to announce Hyperion Wharf. And even then, while the people they had lined up for Hyperion Wharf found out that when it really came time to get the money to commit to start building things, I mean, you remember, Disney actually went in and started tearing down buildings on Pleasure Island because they were going to start construction of this stuff. Suddenly the banks were like, you know, I'm sorry, but we're just not lending. And, you know, not even to you or a longtime customer or somebody who has amazing credit. It's just, we're not lending. And given that Disney didn't want to spend any of its own money to build this, it just stalled and stalled. I mean, that's the irony that they announced back in 2010 that Hyperion Wharf would be open in 2013. If things had gone according to plan, we'd be, you know, a couple of weeks out from the actual opening now.
Wow. So it's been almost 5 years already since Pleasure Island.
It is. But the interesting thing is the time was actually well spent. That for a lot of people at Disney who've been looking at how problematic Downtown Disney is, I mean, there's a couple of hard realities. One is that there was never a plan here. I mean, if you remember, I mean, this market, the what was originally called the Lake Buena Vista Village, opened, in fact, so next week will be its 28th anniversary. It opened on March 22nd. And they've had to change the name multiple times here because people didn't know what a Lake Buena Vista Village is. They, you know, I think within a year they changed the name to the shopping village at Lake Buena Vista, you know, as if we're being too subtle here. You know, you need to come over here with your wallet and buy crap. And then, you know, it became, you know, it became the marketplace, and, you know, then Pleasure Island got added, and then the West Side, and it's never really been a cohesive thing. And in fact, for the people on the West Side who ran the shops and the restaurants and the stuff over there, they was really a frustrating point for them that, you know, people would come over and do the Cirque show, but really not eat or shop or anything. They wanted to go back over to the marketplace side, or they wanted to hang over in PI. And part of what shutting down PI was, you know, we have to make this cohesive. We have to make it so the guests flow back and forth. And now with Disney Springs, this is it. This is actually what, you know, this is what this is all about. In fact, if you've seen any of the photographs that are released today or the models, they're going to level Pleasure Island. I mean, it's gone. All right. And in its place is going to be this sort of entrance plaza that, you know, will take you flat. I mean, this is now literally going to be the entry point for, you know, for this nighttime retail entertainment, you know, dining complex. And if you go right, you can head over to the newly expanded World of Disney, and, you know, what they're hoping will be a much easier to navigate, not quite as tight. I mean, you know, that's the thing of the marketplace side. It really does look like it was built in the mid-70s as an outdoor shopping mall. I mean, it's a lot of confusing design. People get lost in there really easily. And on the other hand, if you go left, you know, you can go over to the West Side, which is actually seeing a lot of, with the opening of Splitsville. In fact, it kind of cracks me up. You can really tell Splitsville is doing well because every time you turn around, they're changing their pricing structure and it keeps going up.
Wow. Really?
What's the pricing now?
We were there at the opening and it was a lot of fun. But the pricing was like, wow, you know, because, well, we weren't on vacation. But if I was on vacation, I would fork out that kind of money. But yeah, what's our pricing?
What have you seen the prices do? Because I don't recall what they were when we were there.
Oh, they just sent them out last week. And it's just that they're in this one of these situations where, particularly on weekends, they have more demand for lanes than they know what to do with it. And you're talking about, what is it, 28 lanes?
There's not many.
Yeah, it's not a lot.
You know, and so it's one of these situations where it's just sort of like, okay, you know, if you're this many in a group, you pay this price point. If, you know, you're four or more, it's this price point. If it's just the two of you, it's this price point. And it's for this much time. I mean, don't get me wrong. They're really nice guys. I got the two owners. I got to sit down with them. And in fact, they were telling me this great story about they had been in negotiation with Disney for, oh God, what was it, 6 months, 8 months? And they had no idea where they were going on property. I mean, they just knew that Disney was talking with them and they were going to give them the space somewhere on property. And finally, they're in the meeting where it's like, well, you know, all right, this seems to be going well. So, and you seem legit. So, you know, we were thinking about the Virgin building, the old Virgin. How did you feel about that? And they're sitting across the table like, oh my God, they want to put us on the West Side. But you got to be cool. That would be interesting. That, you know, yes, you know, and I think 5 minutes out of the meeting, they went and called their architect. So, you know, the very next meeting with Disney, they walk in with full, you know, presentation models of what we could do with the space and this sort of thing. Like, and he's like, wow, you really want this? Okay, cool. So, but now it's kind of the curse of there's nowhere that they can go because they've got, they're in that building. In fact, you got to wonder how they feel about this announcement, because think about it. I mean, this complex is not going to be completed, the new completely reimagined Disney Springs, till 2016, and first construction begins next month. And, you know, the whole notion of this redo is it's, you know, this small Florida town that's broken up into little districts. That, you know, you, in fact, if you, you know, you paid attention to the architectural history, it's like, this is the original part of the town. In fact, what's kind of interesting is the west side is supposedly where everything started out, that it was an outdoor camping area that people would come and stay by the waterside. And it was like, then they decided, ooh, wouldn't it be cool to build a town here? And then they built the town toward the center. And, you know, then there was a cityscape which grew out to the suburbs and all that. But all of that theming and all of that overlay, and more to the point, building those two enormous parking structures, each of them housing, you know, multi-story, each of them is going to house 3,000 cars. This is going to be, you know, again, it's going to be a construction site. It's going to, again, remember what it was like if you got to Disneyland while DCA was being redone. That got challenging. You know, you did a lot of walking by construction fences just to get anywhere.
Retheme all of that over there at West Side as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Wow. In fact, what's kind of interesting, because, you know, the other thing you have to remember here is that for all of the announcement today, they didn't name any tenants, which is kind of weird. You know, that in fact, I don't know if you remember at the Fantasyland press event in December, the original rumor was that, you know, in fact, one of the reasons they held that meeting, you know, our last press event of that trip was over at the Downtown Disney AMC 24.
Yeah.
And, you know, always the assumption was, okay, they're bringing us over here because this is when they announced the, you know, the Pleasure Island redo. This is, you know, we're finally going to find out about it. And in fact, 3 weeks out from the event, the presentation, which had been previously listed in the schedule, is what's new, what's next, suddenly got a name change and it became Around Our World. And it was like, what? You know, yeah. Suddenly it's like, hey, Disney Adventures. Hey, Alani. Hey, you know.
Yeah, there was, yeah, there was
don't
nothing.
Ask any questions about what yeah, we might was... be doing at Walt Disney World, because we ain't got anything right now. And the story that I heard was that, well, actually, there were two stories. One is that a major lessee that, in fact, was going to be the centerpiece of this fell out at the last minute. And that really, you know, that Disney immediately got cold feet, and it's like, well, we can't announce this. We need a major lessee. And then the other story, and this is where it gets really interesting, because this is supposedly part of the plan eventually, that this Florida Department of Transportation was giving Disney a hard time about the dedicated highway ramp that they were asking for the Downtown Disney Springs thing. Because, I mean, face it, if you've been to Walt Disney World and you've tried to get over, you know, if you're coming off of Apopka Vineland Road, you know, coming off that exit off of I-4 and then making your way, you know, down Hotel Plaza and then onto, you know, Buena Vista, you know, Drive, and then trying to get into, you know, into Downtown Disney. If you're doing this on a Friday or Saturday night, that can take an hour.
Yeah. That's the worst area to get into, and they've redone that road a few times. But you have to go through all that Hotel Boulevard area, which is not easy and kind of confusing when you have to turn there. And then parking around there is horrible.
Well, this is where these 6,000, you know, these two giant garages come in. That the idea is that they want to be able to get people in and parked, and in fact, the other thing. Let me be blunt here. One of the things that actually really drove the bus that finally made Disney decide to turn the key on this, and that was in spite of the fact that they still don't have a lot of major lessees lined up. For the past 2 years, attendance has dropped at Downtown Disney. And when they did the survey work, they found out a lot of people who'd previously been to Walt Disney World, as well as Central Florida locals, are like, look, it's a nightmare to get in and out of there. It's tough to park. It's too much traffic. It's just not worth it. You know, don't get me wrong. I love the place. I love to shop at, you know, World of Disney and all that. But, you know, it's not worth the hassle. And, you know, that's a frightening thing for, you know, a destination resort like Disney to hear. So that was like, okay, we have to turn the key on this. And, you know, this is Field of Dreams type work. You know, what they're hoping is if they build it and they get as they're building it, they'll be able to get major lessees on board. Because, again, they weren't able to announce any today. And, you know, there were lots of inferences by Tom Staggs, like, oh, we're talking to people and we'll be announcing some names, but nothing concrete yet. So, you know, again, citing the economy. I mean, face it, when you think about, you know, I mean, not to say that a Barnes & Noble would be coming into, you know, a place like this, but when you think about, you know, a Barnes & Noble that's shutting down flagship stores in major cities around the country, you know, or how many classic brick and mortar retailers are going online, it just, it suddenly becomes that much harder.
Oh, yeah.
To, you know, and remembering that this is Disney, you know, when you go get into bed with Disney, you're paying top rent, you know, for square feet. You're paying the cost of whatever it costs Disney to design your store for you, mm-hmm. you know, and just you're jumping through all of these hoops, you know, and understanding that even when it's done, you're giving Disney a share of the profits, you know, that, that, you know, they're getting a portion of your sales. You know, just it's, that's a lot of things to, that's a lot to ask somebody, you know, a company, particularly in this economy, which is still somewhat soft, you know, or at least on the retail side of things. On the other hand, you know, I will tell you, I was talking with the, in fact, I'll tell you how I kind of got, I found out this was in the works last October, November. A friend of mine had been to a Christmas party for the company that built the original Rainforest Cafe. They're also the company that did built T-Rex, and they just had their holiday party. Don't ask me why they're having their holiday party in October. I guess this is what people in themed entertainment do. But they sent out the after, you know, thank you for coming to our party note. And it, among the things that they mentioned in the note were just, we're so glad you could be there for the unveiling of our new restaurant that we're building as part of the Disney's new Disney Springs complex at Walt Disney World. And, you know, it's like, so the friend forwards the email to me and it's like, oh, that's interesting. you know, I remember I was out in California with Len Testa. We were recording a bunch of the new podcast for the Disney Dish. And I guess it's the place that has the Starbucks that's in downtown Disney. And I, you know, got this email coming on our phone, slipped across the way. We both looked at each other and said, Disney Springs? That's what they're going to call it? Disney Springs?
Like Radiator Springs?
Yeah. I mean, well, actually, supposedly the mythology of this idea that it comes from, I guess the Imagineers were walking around the thing trying to figure out, well, how can we make this unified? How can we make this special? Like, how can we make this, you know, and they ended up, as you walk into the complex, do you know the entrance where you go in between, say, World of Disney and Ghirardelli? There's that bizarre Mickey topiary where Mickey's like holding a pot that he's pouring water out of that's going down into multiple different pots.
Right.
That's the Disney Springs. You know, that's the water that supposedly made people decide they wanted to build here, this the small Florida town. And, you know, the Imagineer who was designing it saw that and went, oh, my God, it's the Disney Spring. And they invented this whole mythology rising out of that planter. So,
wow, that's quite a stretch.
Yeah, I know. But again, that's the gimmick of being an Imagineer. You have to. You know, you have to think, well, I'm building a family bathroom. Can it be themed? You know, you know, that's why suddenly Rapunzel is rising up on the background there. So, but yeah, it's going to be an interesting project to watch. And they determined to not let what happened with Hyperion Wharf happen again. This is actually going to go forward. And depending on who they can get on board and how fast they get them there, there's a couple of different iterations of this plan. There's one I really, really hope that they pull off. Are you familiar with in Vegas with the Fremont Street experience?
I'm not. I haven't been to Vegas for years. Is this
the street that has the neon or the like video above it or something?
Yeah, the light show that the ceiling. There's a version of this plan that's really kind of interesting, and it's it's sort of a, you know, we're sorry, we're going to make life really tough for you guys for a couple of years, gift to the West Side. That supposedly the plan is that they would create this awning that would run the length of the street. So, A, when it rains over on that side of the street, you don't lose, you know, all that business. And then the B factor of this is that supposedly a couple times a night that suddenly this amazing light show would kick on. And, you know, so it would make it so people would want to hang out and want to dine on the West Side just to catch this light show. And more to the point, it would make people who would come in on, say, the Marketplace side think, you know, they're looking at the schedule like, oh, every 15 minutes. Well, we should go over there and check that out. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff on the table, but a lot of it, to be blunt, is dependent on, A, how much money is this place going to make, and B, you know, who do we get on board, you know, who's paying to build a shop or restaurant on that side, and, you know, would they maybe kick in some dough to help make this show happen? So we'll just have to wait and see.
The whole thing is going to be so long and drawn out. I mean, more so than some of their other big projects. And it'll be interesting in the end, but I'd rather see more rides.
Well, but, you know, that's the other hard reality. I mean, this is a destination resort, and that people can't ride rides all the time. That, you know, that you need things like the water parks that they can step away from. And, you know, more to the point, one of the reasons that, for example, Disney's looking to get a highway ramp built is because if you think of, you know, the Mall at Millenia, or how many of you, when you're down there, you know, slip away for an afternoon and go over to the Orlando Premium Outlet, at the very least to check out, you know, the Disney character outlet there.
Oh, they know me by name.
Yeah.
And they know Chris over at the shoe places.
Yeah. Chris has her own parking spot at the shoe place.
There we go. So people, this, you know, some people on vacation, this is what they want. And so Disney wants you to stay on property, you know, to do this. And, you know, but for a lot of people, having done this version of Downtown Disney and how tough it is to, I mean, God help you, if you're just trying to run in there, you know, around the holidays, if, you know, you just, you know, you're in town, you know that there's a toy there that you want to get at, you know, Once Upon a Toy, and, you know, you're trying. I mean, I was in there in, I want to say, January with our friends, Flo and Angela, and they had just gone into World of Disney for a little bit, and I didn't park the car. I drove around for 45 minutes. Ugh. And, you know, eventually they finished shopping, came out, and we left. But that was easier than, you know, for them anyway, that they could shop and enjoy themselves. And, you know, that way we could, once they're done, we could go, as opposed to the, you know, 5 mile hike back to wherever I wound up parking the car. So,
and if
for
you have
a lot
no
of people,
interest,
that's their impression, yeah, of Downtown Disney, is that it's a schlep. And, you know, they, you know, given they've been walking around theme parks for a couple of days already, it's like, I don't need the hassle. So this is all about making this convenient again. This is all about, you know, making it seem new and exciting and fun, so people who tried it, and, you know, don't have good memories, will give it another shot. You know, again, you know, just kind of the California Adventure reinventing itself playbook all over again, only this time with a retail complex.